Hello and welcome or welcome back to Fancy a Blether podcast. I am your host Kirsty Taylor and this week we are chatting to the lovely Kristen Callie about all things international affairs, impacts of cultures on daily life routines and lots of other tidbits. So I think it's one you're going to enjoy, so stay tuned. But for now, let's hop into our intro. Hello, hello, hello. How are we all doing? Look at me doing this again, doing a podcast intro and talking to you like you're an audience on stage, which you're definitely not. So I'm sorry that I just did that again. It's like I never learn. Hi, I'm so excited to be back recording. I have a guest episode for you again. We did have our first kind of Stories of Scotland story come out last week. So if you're into kind of like folklore and things like that, then I think you'll really love, and I don't mean Taylor Swift's album, but also I think if you love Taylor Swift's album, you'll probably like the episode as well. Then I think you'll love last week's episode where I spoke all about the story of Ben O'Donner, the giant. It is also a shorter episode if you happen to need the shorter episode at any point. So it's one you can definitely always go back to. It's a good one. In terms of life updates for everyone listening, I have just been busy working the fringe life. I'm obviously living here in Edinburgh for people that are new to the podcast. And the Fringe Festival is on here all of August. It's an arts festival. It's one of the biggest in the world. It's a lot of fun. It's very social, but it's like long hours, quite stressful. But it's a good time. It's a nice vibe, but it is pretty hectic. So that has pretty much been taking over my life right now. But I did manage to squeeze in some time to chat with Kristen to get this interview for you, which I think you're going to love. So with that in mind, I think we will just start discussing my small wonder of the week. So my small wonder of the week, it's not really a small wonder, actually, I suppose. It's just like spending time with your family, with your parents and stuff. There's nothing quite like a mother's love. Also, a father's love is valid too. However, my mum and dad have been staying recently and I've kind of, like, as I said, been hectic and running all over the place with fringe things and just kind of trying to get my life together after being away for a month, and everything's just a bit, ooh, you know, that's how my brain literally feels like. And my mom has been an angel, an icon. She's literally come here and done my washing without me asking her to, and like made me dinner, and my dad's obviously been helpful as well, but this is a shout out for mom this time, and I'm just super grateful. It's so kind of her and I really appreciate it. So I'm gonna shout my mom out as my small but not really so small wonder of the week. And with that in mind, we will head to RM Gem of the City. So my gem of the city is a place called Moor Bakehouse, and I think there is a couple around the city. I've been a couple of times to the one that's near the Royal Mile. I don't actually know the name of the street, but it's kind of, I think it's maybe Holland Square. It's kind of on the corner of the Royal Mile, just up from Coburn Street. And it just really does great coffee, really affordable, great croissants. And I went there for breakfast and it reminded me that I really love that place. So, and the staff always seem to be like a nice vibe. So I'm going to shout that out as our gem of the city. And then for my Korean essential, we're changing up a little bit, and I'm going to tell you about an app I've been loving. Now, this app's not like an app that you won't have heard of. Like, this is a very well-known app, to be fair, but I'm always late to the party on these things. So this app is called Headspace, and it has like meditations, sleep podcasts, different courses and things like that, all to do with your mental health. And I have to say that the Headspace apps meditations have been really getting me through this like hectic, chaotic time in my life. So I do want to shout out Headspace. I just have the free version, can't pay more for like another version, but I find the free one works for me. So it's up to you, like, obviously whatever your vibe is, but you should download it, check it out, see if you like it. Obviously this isn't an ad, it's just me sharing things I'm loving. So yeah, and with that, I think we will head straight into our poem of the week, which I did find again from my favorite website, Scottish Poetry Library. And this one is called To Edinburgh, and it's by Valerie Gillies, and it can also be found in her book From Cream of the Well, New and Selected Poems, and her poem is within that book. I presume that there's multiple poems in there, but hers is one of them. So like I said, this is To Edinburgh. To Edinburgh. Stone above storms, you rear upon the ridge. We live on your back, its crag and tail. Spires and tenements stacked on your spine, the castle and the palace linked by one rope. A spatchcock town, the ribcage split open like a skelly, a kipper, a gutted haddie. We wander through your windy mazes, all our voices are flags on the high street. From the sky's edge to the grey firth, we are the city, you are within us. Each crooked close and wind is a busy cut on the crowded mile that takes us home. In Eden, Edinburgh, centred on the rock, our city with your seven hills and heavens. So like I said, that poem is by Valerie, and I think it's Giles. And you can find that, or Gillies, I don't know, I'm very bad at last name pronunciation, but you can find it in the show notes on Scottish Poetry Library, and can read along there. So yeah, and now we're going to hop into the episode. But right before we do that, I just want to say, if you're loving the podcast, if you could please follow/subscribe to the show, I'd really appreciate it. It just means that you never miss an episode, which is nice. And if you're loving the show, please leave a review and tell a friend. That's always a nice way to share the podcast, and because I appreciate you all listening. But yeah, let's hop into the chat with Kristen right now. Hello, Kirsty, just jumping in here for this week's Charity of the Week. So this week's Charity of the Week goes to Foursquare, who are all about preventing homelessness and promoting inclusion. So Foursquare is an Edinburgh charity supporting people who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. They employ over 80 staff at 7 locations across the city and provide support, advice, accommodation and learning and training opportunities. They also run one of Scotland's largest social enterprises, Edinburgh Furniture Initiative, where they resell donated furniture to support their charity. And their store is Revolve certified for safety and quality. At Foursquare, they believe everyone deserves a home and a place in their community and support over 1,000 people every year to achieve this. Their aims are to offer a sense of belonging, be supportive, to nurture growth, and to give hope. And they are driven by their values of integrity, excellence, dignity, and support. To find out more about Foursquare and to find out how you can donate, get involved with volunteering, or get in touch to find out more about them, you can head to foursquare.org.uk. So like I said, it was the Foursquare charity. Hello, Kristen, and welcome to Fancy Leather Podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good, thank you. What is your small wonder of the week this week? So we like to ask this to all our guests before we kind of jump into the conversation, just something that you've been loving recently that you can share with our audience.
I mean, I think I've just been especially appreciating this summer the ability to spend time with people who deeply know you. Just kind of the time and space that it can allow in the slightly slower phase of life to connect and spend time with people who have known you for years and come with that ease of being around them.
I love that. That's a great, we've actually never had that one, and this is 3 years of podcast, and that's actually a really good one.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, kudos, that's lovely. There is something, there is something like super special about that. That energy, isn't there, where you just kind of can be yourself around people, that hits differently.
And especially if it's someone that you haven't seen in a while, and you know, if you can pick back up almost exactly where you left off, that it just
feels... It's an incredible feeling, like nothing's changed.
It's really something that I think I've learned to cherish more and more as I've grown in my life.
Oh, I love that. Do you want to let our audience know just like a little bit about you, like who you are, what you do, just kind of like an elevator pitch, if you will?
So my name is Kristen, as stated. I have lived in Edinburgh for almost exactly 2 years now. I come from Houston in the US. I moved here to do a postgraduate degree at the University of Edinburgh, studying international and European politics, and finished and graduated from that last December, and now on the graduate visa doing job searching, chose to stay in Edinburgh specifically, and just kind of, you know, making it work in my life here.
Nice, I love that. Before we kind of jump into your career and kind of what led you down that path and why that was the way you decided to go, what did you like about Edinburgh? What kind of made you think this is somewhere you could see yourself? And what has kind of your relationship been with the city so far? So it's kind of like a two-parter.
So I would say that that differs between before I moved to Edinburgh and then choosing to stay here. And honestly, part of the initial move here was, of course, determined by the programs that I was looking at, because I was looking at academic programs.
Yeah, absolutely.
That played a role. I really liked the program specifically that was available for me here. I applied to Edinburgh and to UCL in London and was actually accepted to London first and was kind of holding out hope for Edinburgh, both because I liked the program a bit more and because I liked the size of Edinburgh. I grew up in a city that is 4 or 5 million people, depending on what the count is at a certain time. So
like the population of Scotland.
Yeah, exactly. Houston has the same population as the entirety of Scotland. I think possibly more, depending on how you count it. And I know what it's like to live in a big city.
Yeah.
So London, in that way, I felt like I could spend a year there in a program and not know London when I left. And two, I know both the pros and cons of living in a big city.
Mm-hmm.
Edinburgh, I felt like I would be able to have a sense of it if I was only here for a year, and that I would have the opportunity to kind of really get a feel for the place that I was living in that regard. And then I ended up really finding it a good fit once I was here, that it has some of the perks of a big city and that there's always things going on if you want to find them. There's a decent flow of people through it, even though the population is relatively small. But it also still maintains the accessibility that large cities end up lacking. Like, I always say that one of the pro-con dualities of large cities is that there may always be something going on. If it takes you an hour and a half each way to get to that thing that's going on, it doesn't really matter that it's happening in the same city as you, because you're not going to do that on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, absolutely. That's honestly a great point, because I do find that whenever I go to London, I kind of forget that that's a thing, because I'm so used to city life, if you like in quotations, of living in Edinburgh, that I'm so used to, if I want to go to something in Edinburgh, I know it's going to take me maximum of an hour, and we're talking like worst case scenario, to get to anywhere I need to be, and that's even if I like chose to walk, it probably wouldn't be more than an hour where I was going. But then I forget when I'm like in London, I'm like, oh wait, but that's like 3, I'm like, that's crazy, like it's so far away. So you have to kind of plan the commute, whereas here I definitely think that's such a thing. Everything is a lot more accessible, public transport, and also just like is very walkable, which I think is a massive, massive thing.
Growing up in Houston, it's smaller in population than London is, but it is physically massive. It is very spread out. So in that way, kind of echoes getting around London. And I know that I lived there from the time that I was 3 until I was 18. And then again from 22 to 28 when I moved to Edinburgh, and or 29. And I know that there are massive parts of the city that I still do not know at all, because I just don't ever go through them, or will avoid going to that part of town because it takes me so long to get to that part of town.
Yeah, it's almost like a day trip for itself, isn't it?
It really
is. To get to a different part of the city. Yeah, no, I definitely. Why Britain? So obviously you looked at UCL in London and you looked at Edinburgh. Were you looking at other countries as well? Or was Britain kind of the aim?
That was a multi-pronged thing. That, one, it was really important to me as someone who was studying an international field that I lived abroad at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. I can get that.
And obviously the advantage of studying in your native language is that it's slightly less stressful to do that in a country that shares your mother tongue than in another country.
Yeah, pro.
And then part of it, honestly, was practical, that in the UK, postgraduate degrees are 1 year, which means that they are, one, quicker, but also then immensely cheaper than paying for 2 or 3 years of a postgraduate study. And in that way, it kind of won out over either the US or continental Europe, where you're talking 2 or 3 years for an upper degree.
Yeah, okay, no, that, yeah, the language thing is definitely a massive factor, because even if the course is in English, it doesn't matter, because you still got to live in the place.
Right, and
that's
an
impact.
Speak, you know, sufficient French, but it is a different mental toll to move someplace where you have all of the stressors of living in a different country, which I think a lot of people who haven't done it don't realize the kind of daily micro stressors that come with it.
Yeah, the kind of like culture shock that comes on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, and as opposed to kind of the massive things, even just, I always think that one of the things that was most stressful the times that I've lived in the UK, because I previously spent some time in Wales in undergrad, is just the ability to not think when you're at the grocery store, for example, that you walk in and you know which brand of dishwashing soap you like, and that works well, and you have that brand recognition, as opposed to having to stare at the bottles of each of the 7 different brands of dishwashing soap that are ahead of you and make a decision for the one item that is on your grocery list, and then repeat that 20 times before you can finish your shopping.
Oh yeah, I definitely think that's the thing. I lived in Canada for a while, study abroad, and my first time shopping, I think I was so overwhelmed also by the size of the supermarket, because I was literally in Toronto, and I had, like, the biggest supermarket I've been to here is big, but it's nothing compared to that. And I spent, I think, $200, and I was like, what have I bought that's cost this much? And obviously, yes, there's exchange rate and stuff, but still, like, I've never spent that much here. And I was like, because I just got overwhelmed by choice, and kind of just was like, oh, I'll just get this and get that and get that. And then I remember leaving being like, and then like not knowing, there's one thing that I always bring up that's so funny. It's such a British thing, but I just never thought about it. Here we have like meal deals, you know, for lunch and things like that. And
yeah,
if I was having
a meal deal.
Yeah, and if I was at uni and having a long day, then it's like you'd go and get a meal deal and you take it to the library. And I remember I was like exam period in Canada, and I never really thought about needing to like buy lunch at that point. And I'd been there for a while, so I was thinking I was pretty on the ball, and I was like, oh, just go and grab a meal deal. And I remember my like shock that there was no meal deals, and I was like, what the heck is happening? And I was like, this is ridiculous, like I've lived here for like 4 months at this point, but there's still things that like throw you off, especially when your whole life you've been one place. It's a massive adjustment, and I definitely think that's a thing where it's just like the smaller things that people don't even consider, because I honestly looked at that grocery bill and I was like, what on earth did I buy here?
Right.
I was like, oh, well,
I think you're kind of prepared for some of the bigger things to be wild, and then it's the just need to grab dinner on the way home level decisions that end up maybe slightly mentally breaking you.
Yeah, the straw that broke the camel's back. Absolutely. So obviously you are going into the field of international affairs. That's kind of where your interest is, as in like politics and things like that. I'm wondering like what kind of led you down that path? What's kind of been your life journey to going that way in your career, at least for the time being?
Yeah, so as I said, I grew up in Houston. Houston is by a lot of measures considered the most diverse city in the US, which a lot of people don't know or realize about it, but by census measures it has kind of almost equal representation of all of the major race groups. It has a massive number of languages. I think the school district that I grew up in has well over 100 languages spoken at homes, and I grew up with friends who either themselves or parents or grandparents, so pretty immediate ancestors and people that they were interacting with on a daily basis, moved from other countries or spoke other languages, and I was exposed to those cultures and religions and sort of daily lifestyle differences from pretty early on that I think had a lot of impact on me. I was always really fascinated by cultures. I was always interested in the ways that you could see that impacted people's decision making, impacted like minutiae of their life in ways that I don't think you necessarily see when you are the one in it. But
like
from an outside perspective, it becomes, oh, wait, this makes sense with these ties that you have, or with the history of this place that your family is coming from or such, even just when we talk about, you know, grandparents' generations yeah. suffering through, you know, the Great Depression, you know, eras around the World War, et cetera, that maybe are particularly frugal as a result of growing up mm-hmm. during this time of heightened economic stress, that there are things like that from countries all over the world that have repercussions. And that, as I got older, realized we're also impacting political decisions, impacting the ways that people kind of saw or governed or allied themselves within their communities and their countries.
No, yeah, I love that. I think taking a little bit of a left turn just for a second, I think one of the things that's a big issue, I guess, in particularly in the world that we are in now and kind of generationally at the moment is kind of that saying of like, oh, I don't talk about politics. Yeah. Like, I'm not interested in that. Like, oh no, let's keep it. That kind of like, it's kind of like that ignorance is bliss thing a little yeah. bit is how I take it. Because yes, obviously you don't need to 24/7 be like, this is who I vote for, and you don't need to be campaigning. But really, I think politics are a lot more ingrained in our day-to-day Absolutely. Lives than anyone's even aware of. I think as you get older, you start to realise that every job mm-hmm. has a relevance to politics. And I kind of wonder, for people listening, that maybe that is their mindset, what is kind of your thing you would say to them, or what is your way that to make them maybe feel more comfortable about starting to think about politics as something that is less of a big topic right. and more of like an everyday existence? Because I think it is a conversation that we are lacking a little bit.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I think it's a very like brush on, well, not that that's not new for Britain, but like in general, it tends to be a lot more of a like, oh, we don't talk about that, or we don't do that. And I think that's something that potentially needs to change because yeah. it's having massive impacts.
Absolutely.
So I wonder what's your kind of view on that?
I mean, I always think that there is no such thing as being apolitical.
Mm-hmm.
People think that they can exist apolitically. They think that their life, if they don't touch politics, that it doesn't touch them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just factually not the way that it works. Now, I won't ever tell anyone that they have to care about all aspects of politics equally, because that's just not practical.
If
a single person tried to follow everything that was going on in politics, they would absolutely lose their mind. Even within political offices, you have people that are specializing in specific mm-hmm. fields, specializing in specific policies or programs, etc. But there are absolutely things that you care about that are being impacted by politics. In fact, probably everything you care about is being impacted mm-hmm. by politics in some way, whether that be the charities that you support, whether that be the school that your children go to, whether that be the streets that you drive down every day that you get annoyed over the potholes on, or where the light has been placed, or even what groceries are being carried at the market near you, that all of those things ultimately do both have political repercussions and come from political repercussions. Mm-hmm. So I think for anyone who's overwhelmed by politics, the thing that I would maybe suggest is starting small, either with an issue that is particularly important to you. I know that for myself and for other people that I know, having an issue that has personally impacted them can kind of be the bridge into a political kind of awareness. As in, if you have someone you love that has had cancer
mm-hmm.
and you then think about, okay, well, the research for finding drugs that work for cancer, that fund treatment centers for cancers, etc., all of those are coming from government decisions a lot of times. The charities that are supporting those often have some kind of state funding that they are receiving in addition to donations. If you start looking into that, you may mm-hmm. realize that, oh, there are certain candidates who are more likely to support this. That feels like an important thing for me to do, is to make sure that I vote for them, tell other people maybe why that's an important thing for me, and have that conversation. Or that, you know, your local council district is having an issue that really annoys you, or just that you want to know more about, and you look at literally your neighborhood level first. which can actually be a really great way to see that you're making change as well, because it's usually a smaller, you know, group of people, of constituents, mm-hmm. that politician is responding to and reacting to, and you may be able to have a face-to-face conversation with them or someone in their office and really kind of get the issue that is important to you across. And so I think that that can feel very tangible in a lot of ways and very rewarding. And it doesn't have to be something that you focus on every day. Because obviously politics goes through phases. Obviously our lives go through phases. But it is kind of always there in the background.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's a great, great piece of advice, because I think it is something that also you maybe start to become more comfortable with as you mature. I think it is something that is hard if you've grown up kind of not super aware and you've had to muddle your way through and figure it out yourself. So I think that is a great piece of advice, and I really love the neighborhood idea and kind of getting that face to face with the politician, because I think what that does from both sides is it humanizes the experience.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't just make you realize that that politician's a human being,
mm-hmm.
it makes them realize that the thing you're talking about is impacting real people. Because I do think also it would be natural in a job that is so high stakes, so high pressure, so high responsibility, after a while it's probably quite easy to choose just to like dehumanize certain problems, because it makes it easier, because it can be an easy job, and I don't envy that job at all. But I think that is one of the things of like human nature that is both like a beautiful thing and a terrible thing, is subjectivity.
Right. And I know,
and
that
I think
for me, that kind of understanding that personal relation to politics came relatively easy, because I was in fourth grade when 9/11 happened and was obviously living in the US. My best friend at the time was the daughter of Pakistani immigrants who was Muslim.
Yeah.
And so I got to see someone who was in a more vulnerable group than I was as a white American ancestry human, processing these events that were having very real impacts on the way her community was being treated in the US, even in a diverse area. And I also distinctly remember a conversation that I had with my grandmother when I was in, again, elementary / primary school, that my entire family is from Louisiana. My dad's family lived in the same town for over 300 years. He was the first person to kind of move out of that town. And so I was the first generation that was growing up outside of that town. And I remember my grandmother coming to visit us and saying, "I can't believe all of the school books that you get to bring home, that all of your textbooks are in such good shape. They have enough that all the students bring them home to work from them or to study them after class." And I was going, what do you mean? Like, that's
like normal
school
books.
And she went, "None of the schools in our hometown have enough books for students to bring home. And most of the ones that they have are 20 or 30 years old." And I went, "Oh, someone chooses who gets books and who doesn't. Even for students, where you're supposed to have a book at school, how many books those schools have is decided by someone. What condition those books are in is decided by someone." And I think that that was one of those seeds for me of, hey, this makes like very concrete differences in just even what education an 8-year-old is getting.
Yeah, I think it's particularly important as well to think about it from that perspective, because when you think about it's impacting a child, but they can't impact politics, I think that is a good way to think about it, in terms of even if you're not a parent, even if you're not interested in having children, there is still a level of responsibility as a society to the future. And I think that when you start to then consider the children, and even if you're not a child person, that's fine, I get that, but these decisions are impacting these children, and they don't have the ability, obviously they have a certain amount of agency, but they can't vote, they can't do a lot of things. So I think it's really important to like keep that in mind as well when you think about education, things like that.
Well, and that was part of the original argument for public school systems, was that the entire society benefits from an educated populace.
Oh, absolutely.
That you want, even just when you're talking about the vital roles of people who, you know, work at service counters mm-hmm. and cashiers and such, do you want a cashier who has had a really wonderful math class or one who has not had the opportunity to be highly educated on mm-hmm. that? Say if the power all goes out and
in a pinch
you need someone to just be able to help you get the food that you need until it's back on after the snowstorm clears.
Yeah, or like the card machine is down and things like that is something that, it's very valuable. And I think it also, again, it humanizes these people's experiences.
Absolutely.
It allows people to be more than just a job, because maybe that's not the most important thing to them, but maybe it is important to them to feel like they have the ability to have agency
right.
in their life. So I think that is an excellent point. And obviously you in your life have lived in America and you have lived here, which I think gives you kind of a unique perspective, one that other people have, but everyone has their own experiences. But what has kind of been your experience, because obviously we do share a language,
yes,
but I would say regardless of that there's a lot of cultural differences, and I wonder what has kind of been things that have really stood out to you as big differences between the countries, or things that stood out to you that you were surprised at, like the similarities of them both.
I will say for similarities, it always, and I guess also for differences, there are always little things in the supermarket that catch
mm-hmm.
me off guard, which is a tiny little microcosm of the differences, but I feel like it's kind of a reflection because it's what you're literally interacting with
mm-hmm.
every day in your home, your groceries and such, that some brands that I would never have expected to be outside of the US will be, like the fact that Old El Paso is the pervasive, you know, Latin American, Mexican style
uh-huh.
food purveyor for the world, and it's named after a town in Texas. I always think it's just hilariously
mm-hmm.
bizarre. And then on the other end that you'll have things like, both the US and the UK have Smarties,
mm-hmm.
completely different candies though.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, wildly different.
Not at all related. So that's just, you know, one tiny microcosm of it. I will say that the first time I went to a doctor in the UK and they prescribed me medication, I took the prescription to the pharmacy, they filled it, gave it to me, and I stood there and waited.
Mm-hmm.
And they turned to me and went, "Do you have any other questions or is there something else you need?" And I said, "No, am I good?" And they said, "Oh yeah, that's all we have for you, you're fine." And I walked out without paying and felt like I had just stolen something. Because I had never in my life
uh-huh.
picked up medication for free.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most surreal feeling to me. Should it be surreal? Is an entirely different conversation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know that people here always realize how fantastically
fortunate,
lucky, blessed, whatever synonym you want to use there that resonates with you, having that is.
I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit more in terms of like, what is the costs? So I don't think people know. I mean,
no, they don't.
I don't think people know what the costs are. Because when you told me, like, I knew a couple already, but I didn't know a lot. And I think just hearing the costs makes you even more shocked, because already
yes.
you're kind of like, that's ridiculous. But when you hear the hard facts,
right.
it makes it a hard thing to ignore. And yes, the NHS is not perfect. Nobody's saying it is, but really, is anything perfect in this world?
Well, and
it's better than nothing.
It's better than nothing. And I will say that most of the critiques I hear on the NHS come from it either being underfunded or people thinking that the American style system works differently than it does.
Yes.
And so they think that moving towards that will be fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, as someone who has lived both in general under both
mm-hmm.
systems and has lived with chronic illness under both systems,
okay.
drastically,
mm-hmm.
by far much easier to exist within the
mm-hmm.
NHS system than it is within the American system. So speaking from my experience,
yeah, absolutely.
There are, let me rephrase that. I think that there's generally the knowledge that for most people in the US, having medical insurance is tied to your employment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that people realize with that you are still paying for that insurance. That is either taken out of your paycheck or you pay for it separately. And we're talking still on the level of hundreds of dollars a month that you are paying for the privilege of being enrolled on your employer's contracted health insurance. Mm-hmm. And if you have a family of, say, four, can easily reach $1,000 a month. Wow. There was a period between when I was no longer able to be on my father's insurance because I had aged out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got accepted to the US's disability scheme that provided me a more affordable insurance, where I was paying $500 a month for insurance coverage,
mm-hmm.
just to have that base level. So, I mean, we're talking like, depending on the exchange rate, you know, a good 400 pounds
oh, yeah,
per
absolutely.
Month.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that does not negate the fact that you have to pay every time you go to a doctor's office, every time you have a test run, and every time you pick up an insurance. I'm sorry, every time you pick up a medication. Each of those can vary depending on what your insurance is. I believe under that system, I was doing $20 to $40 copays, depending on the type of doctor I had, for any appointment that I had, whether that was, hi, I think that my finger has been sprained. Can we please get it braced? To,
mm-hmm.
I think that there's something majorly wrong that we need to further investigate. Whatever type of appointment it was.
You're sure, still, and then every time, so if you have to go multiple times
every
for something, everyone you'd need to pay
yes.
again.
Yes, and your eyes and teeth are not included in that system at all.
Oh, wow, okay.
Those are entirely separate additional insurances.
Wow.
Vision insurance and dental insurance
mm-hmm.
are each separate from each other and separate from your general health insurance.
This is really three.
It's really three. And a lot of people do not have all three.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Because it's often additional to get vision and dental
mm-hmm.
insurance. On that same insurance plan, I then was paying every time I picked up medications. I take medications daily, so that kind of adds up relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be anywhere from medications that were widely available and have pretty, you know, easy access generics. You could get probably a $10 fill for a month's prescription. And that
mm-hmm.
was, you know, the cheap deal. I still have medications that I either don't get filled when I was living in the US or that I didn't get filled when I was living in the US, or that there's one that I have to still get filled in the US and bring over just because it hasn't been approved in the UK yet.
Mm-hmm.
That medication costs me $500 for a 3 month supply, which is the cheapest way for me to get it is
wow.
3 months at a time.
Yeah.
Because it's $200 a month for a 1 month supply. So I get a slight discount by going
mm-hmm.
for the 3 month, but that depends on my ability to pay $500 up front.
Yeah, absolutely.
I regularly had medications where I was paying over $150 to $200 for a single month supply that I didn't really have much of a choice about
mm-hmm.
whether I could take or not. There was a while where the migraine medication that worked best for me, for example, was going to cost several hundred dollars a month. And then you start running into choices between, okay, do I have this medication on hand that allows me to function in society
mm-hmm.
and even just buy groceries for myself, that I can
mm-hmm.
walk into a grocery store and pick up things that I need and feed myself that night? Or do I use that money for any other sort of daily need that
yeah.
I have?
Mm-hmm.
And I was coming from a very privileged position where I could make that choice.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, it's not an option. The most notorious of these is the EpiPen prices
mm-hmm.
in the US that regularly cost over $200 for a pack of EpiPens, which are what you give yourself when you're having a life-threatening allergic reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You might not ever need them, but if
you
need
to have
need
them, well, yeah.
And you don't have them,
you're screwed.
Yeah. So that's a wild gamble to ask people to make. I think the thing that usually shocks people the most is that ambulances can bankrupt people. You will usually, even with insurance, you can pay $1,000 to $2,000 for an ambulance ride.
That's insanity.
There is also the hiccup with ambulance. There's a hiccup with ambulance, you know, responses where the ambulances are required to take you to the closest hospital that has open beds available. Understandably, because if someone is having a heart attack, you want them to get care as quickly as possible.
As quickly as possible, yeah.
Your insurance may not be contracted with that hospital because your insurance gets to choose who they work with and who they don't, which under normal circumstances mean they choose what doctors you see and which doctors they don't. If your insurance isn't contracted with a hospital that you get sent to, you pay then what they call out-of-network prices, which are more expensive than the ones that they have agreements with, where you pay in-network. So there are many horror stories of people, both with insurance and without insurance, where because of an ambulance ride combined with the ER visit and whether or not there was a hospital stay attached, but usually if you're calling an ambulance, you at least have, you know, an x-ray that needs to be done or some kind of other test, admittance, etc., where you're talking, you know, $30,000.
Wow.
Easily. Geez. Which is not a sum that a lot of people have in their bank account.
Absolutely not.
So there are a lot of studies about how the vast majority of Americans are one major expense away from kind of massive financial stress.
Especially when, if you are at that level of ill, you're not able to work.
Right.
So then it's like, how are you supposed to be able to afford that? Because you will surely be off work during the time that you're that,
well, yeah,
for that time that you're unwell, and that means then you're not making money. So then, and then even then, the money you get, you never get it. Like, no, there's very few jobs that get paid on the day you work. Like, everything comes late. So it's like, how do you? Yeah, that's absolute insanity. Like,
especially considering that money. Paid leave doesn't exist in the same way in the US. That a lot of places don't have to continue to pay if you aren't physically showing up at work. Or you could lose your job because you missed work because you were ill. So the level of stress that adds to people's lives, I think, can't really be understated. It is common knowledge among most people that I know who are Americans that if someone is having a medical emergency, if you at all think that they have time to get to the hospital another way, you do not call an ambulance.
Wow.
People will call Ubers to get to the hospital. They will call friends to come pick them up. They will take taxis. I don't know anyone who has ever willingly taken an ambulance ride. And I know people with chronic conditions will sometimes carry around cards on them that say, please do not call an ambulance. Wow. I know what this situation is, and I cannot afford that. I've heard of people with epilepsy, for example, doing that because they know that if they have a seizure,
someone will call an ambulance.
Very possibly, which, because it is an alarming thing to see if you don't know that this is part of someone's medical history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but for them, it's something that they have a protocol in place for. If someone calls an ambulance for something that you already know how to handle, you're out a couple of $1,000s. Even if the ambulance doesn't take you to the hospital, you still owe the money for the ambulance call.
Yeah, that's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I think we are going to have to wrap up here. I feel like there's so many other things we could say, but I'm sure we can do another episode another time because I feel like there's so much more we could talk about. I feel like we're just getting started. But honestly, everything you had to say was so great, and I'm sure the listeners are going to have loved all the, like, the facts about kind of the differences, and also just, I think, the advice on figuring out how to get into politics is something that is really, really beneficial. And I think it's something, particularly in the generation that's kind of in their 20s, going into their 30s now, that that is something we're starting to become comfortable with, and I think it's a good thing that we're starting to see people caring.
I also highly recommend, especially mm-hmm. for younger people, if they're trying to build a political community, look into volunteering with the political party that feels close to you.
Yeah.
There's always local branches, especially if there's elections coming up. They often need people just to do things like hand out flyers or make sure that voters are registered, things like that, that they will train you for. They sound very intimidating in theory a lot of times, but I've made good friendships that way. I just had a trip with someone that I've known for 5+ years because we met working on a political campaign.
Oh, amazing. That's
And they will absolutely help guide your hand, even if it feels intimidating. So that can also be a way to really see both its impact in your community and just to meet people who have similar values to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a big one, is if you are, even if you're just looking to exist more in a new community, if you've moved somewhere, I think that's a great way to like meet people, make friends, create a community, is because you know straight away going in there that most likely most of the people there will have values that link to you, which I think is something that is very fundamental for a lot of people in friendships. I think, yes, you can disagree on certain things within friendships, but I think your core values have to align to a certain extent or the friendship's not going to work. So I think that's a lovely piece of advice to end on. So what is your Korean essential? Every week we ask our guests this, just something that like makes you feel cozy and warm inside. I know it is summer, however, having said that, it's not been super warm recently, but regardless, it is technically the warm season, but I think it's still nice to feel like cozy and warm within yourself in summer. I don't think like currying in is just for the winter. So what is kind of something that you've been loving doing that makes you feel that way?
So I will say, especially in the winters here in Scotland, I go on audiobook walks.
Oh, why? Cool.
Because it is light for very specific hours of the day. And if the weather is a bit grim, you don't necessarily even want to go outside during those light hours. And I will find an audiobook that I exclusively listen to while I'm walking and force myself to get out of the flat for, you know, even 20 minutes a day while I'm walking to the grocery store or such. Listen to the audiobook, you know, kind of get a chance to immerse in another world for a bit and get the benefit of being outside and remembering that even if the weather is shit, I don't know if I can say that.
That's fine, yeah. Okay.
Even if the weather is shit, that we still get some fulfillment for being out in fresh air.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree. I think it's important to still enjoy the fresh air, especially when you are fortunate enough to be in a city where there is fresh air. That's something that I think whenever you come back from being away somewhere, you like, oh, especially like whenever I visit London, I come back here, I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh,
Edinburgh does green spaces fantastically well.
Yeah, is there a particular place that you prefer to get audiobooks from?
I am a big fan of using your library for audiobooks.
Nice.
Most people don't really think about having that resource via libraries, but I know the Edinburgh Library specifically uses both Libby and BorrowBox, and that also then makes getting an audiobook very low risk, because if you've never listened to audiobooks before and you kind of are going, oh, I don't know if I can follow that, or I don't know if I'll enjoy it, you're renting it for free. And if you don't find that it meshes well with you, you return it and you've not wasted any money. You've just used a bit of your time to try out something new. I very rarely get an audiobook from any other form than a library, and I highly recommend always exploring the digital resources that your library offers.
Yeah, I think that's actually a great thing as well, because public libraries really need our support now more than ever. And I
another
think
politics
is,
in the daily.
Yeah, is an important thing, is to let people know they don't just have physical books. There's so much in a library. There's so many opportunities. Even just like access to a computer for people that don't normally have access to that is massive.
Or just using their printer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's a great recommendation, is to definitely check out your public library. And if you are in Edinburgh, the libraries here are amazing. There's tons.
Yes.
And they're all gorgeous.
And librarians everywhere are always happy to help you.
Geniuses as well. They're so smart. The things you ask them and they know the answer. I'm like, I didn't even know what I meant, and you knew what I meant. Is there a book, is there one particular audiobook that stands out to you as one you really enjoyed?
So I would say for nonfiction, mm-hmm. I really enjoyed John Green's The Anthropocene Reviewed, mm-hmm. which looks at different facets of human life in the world.
Okay.
It's also especially great if you maybe have difficulty paying attention to a long-form story because mm-hmm. it's each chapter is about something individual. It makes it really easy to listen to on, say, a commute where mm-hmm. you have a 15-minute stretch, and maybe that's not enough for you to get in the full chapter of a normal mm-hmm. book, but you can get in, you know, an essay or two.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed that one done in audiobook format. I also really enjoyed... I need to look up the author's name. Because I know that I know. I also really enjoyed The Starless Sea by Aaron mm-hmm. Morgenstern as an audiobook because it is one that has multiple narrators, and each of those narrators is voiced by a different voice actor in the audiobook, and it made it very easy to follow each of those stories. Mm-hmm. It was a really wonderful kind of grand tale to get absorbed in audio format, and I just found it to be a really enjoyable listen.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on this week,
Kristen.
It's been lovely chatting with you. Just to end off, can you let our listeners know where they can find you if it's like that they want to get in touch and find out like more about what you do, or maybe they're like want to share like things about politics and have a chat with you? Where's kind of the best place to reach out to you?
Probably the easiest place to find me is on Instagram. Uh-huh. I am K-N Kalle, so K-N as in Nancy, and then my last name is C-A-L-L-A-I-S.
Perfect, and I will have it linked in the show notes as well, so if anyone is struggling to find it, and we'll also have it tagged on our Instagram, so if you head to Fancy a Blather, I'm sure you'll be able to find it there as well to make it just super easy for everyone. But again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. To everyone at home, have a good week. Thank you.
Bye.
That is the end of this week's episode. Thank you everyone so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do leave a review, share it with your friends, tag us on Instagram. Our Instagram is at Fancy Blether. Any other links mentioned throughout the episode will be tagged in the show notes. And make sure to stay tuned for a new episode next Sunday with a guest, and check out our sister podcast, Conceptual Conversations, who have a new episode out on Saturday. Where our host Kirsty and her friend Naomi discuss different concepts every week. A good one, so I recommend giving it a check out. Thank you, have a good week. Bye.